So we're really pleased to have first Catherine Applegate. She's going to speak about BioLogos outreach to scholars, pastors, and teachers.
Great. Since you are not going to use a shepherd set, I am going to set a timer on
the
phone.
Well, I will. Yeah.
Well, the next speaker
I don't expect it'll be too long, but... Great. Well, thanks everybody for coming. It's a delight to be here. I've only been to, I think this is my third ASA meeting, so it's great to be renewing connections from previous ones. This is an education session, and I'm a bit, privileged to be in that. I'm not an educator myself in a K-12 or a higher ed situation, but I do work at BioLogos, which is in the business of largely involved in education. So today I would just want to share with you a little bit briefly about what BioLogos is. I assume most of you know, but just in case you don't. And then share with you some of what I've had the pleasure of doing the past 3.5 years through a program at BioLogos. So BioLogos had its origin in a book and a scientist. Francis Collins, who led the effort to sequence the human genome, wrote a book called The Language of God in 2006, in which he made a case for his faith and also talked about how he integrates his Christian faith with his scientific understanding, and that included evolution. And that was pretty new to many people when that became such a best-selling book. Many people wrote into Francis with questions about how all of this works out in practice. And he was so overwhelmed by those inquiries. I was one of them. I sent him a note on my best stationery. I had a question. I was like, I need to, figure all this out. So I was definitely an early advocate for the need to really come at the question of origins with a strong focus. And so I appreciate the complementary aspects of what BioLogos does and what ASA does. ASA has a much broader focus and has a more encompassing mission around the sciences and engineering than BioLogos does. But we are in the business of inviting the church and the world to see the harmony between science and biblical faith, and in particular around evolutionary creation is our position. Okay, so there have been many studies, and I'm sure Jennifer and Paul will speak about some of the ones that the Dozer program has been involved with, but it is undeniable that in this country there is a large rejection of the science of evolution, and that falls pretty clearly along religious lines. So white evangelical Protestants are the most likely of the group surveyed in this Pew poll to reject human evolution, 64%, saying that that humans have existed in the present form since the beginning. And this is contrary to what mainstream science has revealed about our biological origins. And so what's a Christian to do? We need to be able to make sense of the data, but also take into account the concerns that Christians have. So that is where BioLogos is putting most of its efforts in speaking to the evangelical church. Many of us on staff are, we have somewhat of a diversity of particular faith traditions, but mostly all centered in evangelical Protestantism. So the impact of BioLogos has been magnified in recent years, just as our web presence and other in-person events have grown. We had over 1 million visitors to our website last year, and we continually get stories from all different kinds of people. But I would say the three types that we hear from a lot are people who love science, but they just don't feel free to pursue Christianity or spirituality in general. There are people who are committed believers but feel that they couldn't pursue a career in science. And there are people who are committed believers but they've decided to walk away from the faith. And we think that's all three of these. It's very sad, I know, to all of you in ASA who are in the business of helping people reconcile science and faith. So we hear from people like Natasha and Connor here who say things like, you know, they've realized that they can find harmony between faith and science, and that, you know, they used to think that maybe the Bible wasn't true, but now they love studying science, and they accept the science as complementary to God's word revealed in the Bible. So many people, that Pew poll I showed earlier showed that many people think that, you know, it portrays the view that there's sort of this huge split and polarization in our culture. And that is true to some extent, but some recent work by Jonathan Hill in a study funded by a grant from BioLogos shows a somewhat more nuanced perspective. And this is, you can read about it in he's done some write-ups in Christianity Today or on our website, but he did it's called the National Study of Religion and Human Origins, a study of over, I think, close to 3,000 U.S. adults. And he showed that there is a strong emphasis from science, from social context in terms of what people believe. So if you want to know the recipe for a creationist, I've sort of taken aback by this title of a blog piece that he wrote on our site, thinking, you know, doesn't that sort of belittle, you know, all of people's thought and reasons for why they believe what they do? And I think there's some justification for being really careful in how we talk about these sorts of sociological results. But that said, there's two factors that are part of he picked apart what are the many factors, the most important factors for why people believe what they do. And for very certain young earth creationists, two factors that are extremely predictive are their beliefs about inerrancy of the Bible and belonging to a religious congregation that has a settled position. So if they reject human evolution and they have a view of inerrancy, then that leads to being a committed young earth creationist 81% of the time. Whereas that's only 38% of the time if you have the same beliefs about the Bible but attend a congregation that has no firm position. So you have some flexibility to pursue different options. So the social context of congregations, of families, really matters. And so I think it's behoove of us to pay attention to that when we're trying to talk to people about how to integrate science and faith. It's not just simply providing them with scientific facts. Yeah, Ted.
Here, Catherine, I wanted to mention for the benefit of the credibility of this research, I was at a conference 2 months ago where this social scientists from all over the world, where this work was presented. My understanding is this is considered the best current work on this subject. Mm-hmm. This is considered world-class stuff, Jonathan told us about his research methodology and the results.
Thanks, Ted. So for the benefit of the recording, I'm just going to reiterate what you said, that Ted Davis, who's a historian of science, was at a conference a couple of years ago with world-class sociologists, and this is considered one of the best studies in the field. Great. So at BioLogos, we have a number of strategies that we are working towards and new resources to increase dialogue about evolution. I'm going to go through and give some examples, but just as an overview of what some of these strategies are. I think it's pretty important to connect the world of higher education with the life of the church. We also think we have to help people understand what the Bible does and does not say about origins. We need to present a range of views about origins, and here's probably the most important one. We need to do that in a gracious way and respectful of other positions. We need to show young people how faith and science can be complementary. And then finally, we want to bring church leaders and scientists together. So connecting the world of higher education with the life of the church. This has taken form most visibly through a subgrants program that we ran and is just concluding in next month. This is we received funding from the John Templeton Foundation, and with the support of the Issachar Fund as well, we're able to give out 37 grants across North America and Europe to some individuals, many teams, of very interdisciplinary groups of people, theologians, scientists, philosophers, pastors, and they're doing a range of things, from very practical things like resource development to writing scholarly books, to producing artistic expressions of how faith and science fit together. So quite a range of projects. It's been really fun to manage. It's been my job the past 3 years to manage that program. And I just want to give a shout out to ASA again, because of the 37 grants across the sphere that we've given, I hadn't realized this until last night when I was putting this particular slide together, that a full third of the grants that we gave went to members of the ASA. And not everybody involved in ECF is even represented on this slide, because for example, Hal Reed here, who's our moderator, is part of a team from Oral Roberts. So you see Dominic here, but there's a bunch of other people associated with this. Now, some of you may be noticing something glaringly obvious about this group. I'm looking at some of the ladies in the room, and people of color too. So this is a plea on the part of BioLogos, and I'm sure ASA, that we really want to draw others into the conversation. We want to get diversity going, but you know, we did a big selection process. There were over 200, there were about 225 applicants for grants, and we winnowed it down to some of the very best. And there were many people that we had to turn away, which was unfortunate. But a great diversity of projects. If you're interested in them, they're all listed on our website. We just finished having a fantastic conference about 3 weeks ago in Grand Rapids. We had 8 plenary speakers that you see here. Ted gave a fine lecture there, and as many of these, there are 6 grant recipients actually featured here as well, and those lectures are slowly being put online in video format on our website. We also had 5 parallel tracks in church and culture, education, evolution and design, with a sort of a separate thing on evolutionary psychology, human origins and divine action, and that led to a total of 44 talks, 20-minute talks of the sort that I'm giving now, and all of the audio files for those talks are now available online. So if by the end of this meeting you haven't gotten enough and you just want more, go to our website and check out the many great presentations there. So, second strategy is helping people understand what the Bible does and does not say about origins. This is one example of an ECF grantee of ours, John Walton, who has received much acclaim in recent years for his Lost World series of books, most recently The Lost World of Adam and Eve. And he's an Old Testament scholar at Wheaton College, and for a long time has been just sharing his perspective on ancient documents, the ancient Near Eastern world, and trying to point out that coming to different conclusions than traditional ones about how to interpret Genesis are not necessarily motivated by new scientific claims. It's not that we are trying to allow science to manipulate our readings of the Bible or any such thing, but to say that the Bible doesn't actually make claims that inherently contradict an evolutionary model. So he's making space for people to read the Bible with fresh eyes based on what is known about the context of the ancient world. And the project that he did for BioLogos was a speaking tour. And in 1 year, he went to some 60-plus locations all over the world and spoke to over 8,000 people. So that was a great way to really jumpstart getting his message out. A third strategy is to present a range of views about origins in a gracious way. And I think this is well typified by a book that the BioLogos president, Deborah Harsma, and her wonderful husband, Lauren, is in the corner there, wrote together a few years ago. They released a second edition, and through the grants program, were able, in fact, they were not involved with this project, but the publisher of their book said, hey, wouldn't it be great if we had a video series to go along with that? So there's several, about 10-minute segments on this DVD, which is also actually freely available for streaming on the Faith Alive website. I give the URL here. But these are really great resources. They're being used all over the country. all over the world. I looked on Amazon recently just to see what people were saying, and you know, these were some of the recent reviews. You know, at last, light and no heat. You know, that's probably got to be a scientist out there, but you know, commended to be avoiding for avoiding polemics. I think these are that's rare to find. I think we're having an increasing abundance of material of that sort. But the nice thing about this resource is that it does present a range of views and really looks at kind of pros and cons of each one. So I'd recommend that if you're looking for a resource that is would be used in maybe a context where maybe you're in a conservative church that's not really ready to talk about evolutionary creation yet, but could consider it alongside other views. So that's a nice resource there. And then I think for the sake of time, I have a short video, which I'd love to share, but I won't because I want to make sure and leave some time for questions at the end. But if you go on our website, you can find some videos that we put together to highlight some of the people that have been involved in these projects over time. One of them, there's a series of three, and one of them is called Equipping the Next Generation. It's all about how resources for young people are have been prepared or being made and just showing how they can be complementary. Actually, I think you guys, well, at least you, Steve, are going to be talking about one of those projects. So it's a good place to hope that you'll take up the mantle there. One of these other projects in this category, though, that I want to draw your attention to is a video series called The Author of Life. And Diane Sweeney is a biology teacher at a school, not a Christian school, but a school in Hawaii, and her chaplain, Josh Hayashi, worked together to produce a series of short videos which are really aimed at young people and helping them kind of have conversations. So they're working to pilot this material in churches. She's actually going to be piloting these resources in John Ortberg's church in Menlo Park, if you've heard of him, this fall. So we think these are great resources. They're really beautiful. Now, finally, bringing church leaders and scientists together, several of the projects were aimed at really helping church leaders and scientists communicate. This one project I wanted to highlight is two biologists from Gordon College, Craig Story and Justin Topp, did two week-long retreats for pastors to come and hear from top scientists about how science works, what the discoveries are, and really wrestle with things in a safe space. And we were amazed. We got a thank you note from one of the participants there who said, thank you for giving these guys a grant, because without this, we wouldn't have had this amazing experience. And he was from a conservative denomination. He said it was one of the most stimulating conferences he's been to in 40 years of ministry. So you can just see the impact that a pastor who has been touched that way is then going to be able to go on and really articulate more fruitful narratives around how faith and science can fit together. And there are other strategies too. Informing the media is a big one, and Michael Cromarty is a wealth of wisdom about this. He does something called a Faith Angle Forum, and they meet together twice a year in Miami Beach with top journalists from New York Times, Washington Post, Slate, other major journalistic outlets, and the goal is to bring in Christian leaders from a variety of fields and talk to them about what do Christians actually believe. I mean, sometimes you've probably read a news article where you're thinking, does this person have any clue what Christianity really teaches? And so he's in the business of helping to educate the media. And through his grant from BioLogos, he's bringing in, in fact, Jennifer was one of the speakers a couple of years ago, and the BioLogos chair, Jeff Hardin, was last year. There's been a number of pieces come out through these events, which is great to just get the message out in different ways. Also, we have a couple of different groups working on artistic-related things. There's the Image Magazine, a major publication in the arts world, and they did a special issue on evolution and the Imago Dei. It's freely available on their website, as is a big study guide. So if you know people in the humanities for whom you're trying to connect on these issues, this is a really helpful resource. There's also projects aimed at engaging particular denominations, and the Nazarenes Exploring Evolution book and conference that took place under the leadership of Tom Ord is one fine example of that. And then I would just note there's also a bunch of different international groups who are doing really great work to translate resources. This is a new book of essays by Simon Conway Morris from our friends in Spain, and they translated so much stuff and produced a whole bunch of really new content in Spanish. So this is opening up resources in different languages. We had groups in Spain, France, the Netherlands, and then one of the French guys is also in French-speaking Canada. So we have all of a sudden a lot of great resources in other languages and opening up resources to millions of people all over the world. So we're excited about that. And that's it. I'm 43 minutes over time, so I don't know where that translates to. But 43 seconds, I should say. Okay.
We have time for questions, comments.
Yeah, if you have questions just more about what BioLogos is or any of the other programs that we do, I'm happy to take those as well.
Do you want us to come up to that mic? Or?
No, it's a video game. Should we come to the mic?
Sure.
Oh, there's one there. I couldn't see it behind the pole. Okay.
Just want to say thank you and how encouraging this is, because I've been aware of the problem, but I didn't know how far along the solution was, so this is really encouraging.
Oh, thank you.
Catherine, you want to say something about what I talked to you about the outreach with other groups that may hold to a different position, and how I love that term, gracious. So
thank you.
Maybe
yes.
More gracious than some of us.
Yes. We have had some really fruitful dialogues with groups of other positions, most notably Reasons to Believe, an Old Earth organization led by Hugh Ross and Fuzz Rana. They and BioLogos have been meeting together for the last, five or six years, mostly through closed-door discussions, really hammering out what it is that we agree on, what do we disagree on, where the conflict areas might be, worshiping together. It's been the small groups of the leadership. And entering into that in the last several years has been a group of Southern Baptist scholars, and they have been helping to clarify what some of the theological questions are in relating to the science. So we've really benefited from that dialogue. We've had exchanges on our website of this nature, and there's some joint speaking engagements that have taken place. But we really are committed to understanding that these people are really smart people. Like, people with different views aren't necessarily intellectually any different, but we all have our preconceptions that lead us to different ways of understanding things. So we're just excited about being able to come alongside those groups and think together and understand that unity in Christ is actually a lot more important than whether or not we agree on the age of the earth or common descent or such things.
Huh? Yes, Catherine. I'd like you to play along with me for a moment as we think about the idea of the flow of belief from a marketing manager's perspective. Who's moving where and why is kind of the big question. Because some of these apologetic approaches by different groups, obviously they're intending to get people into Christian faith and defend the faith. Mm-hmm. And so there's various apologetic strategies that people are using. A marketing manager would say, well, what works? What's working? What's not working? And that would require, a lot of survey research, sociological research, to determine. And maybe Dr. Hill's work is the kind of thing that we need, because, ultimately, yes, we can talk on the theoretical level about which views are more accurate than others, but on the practical level, if you play that game for a moment, What works is creationism convincing more people to become Christians, or is it discouraging more people from keeping the faith? If you could find sociological data that would demonstrate that, it might change the strategies that folks are using. So that's just something I'm tossing out, and I wonder how much you have pursued questions like that.
Yeah, I think that's a terrific question. I think not enough really is known about the flow of, you know, numbers of flow between different viewpoints, and how that translates to you know, what's actually driving that. I mean, it's undeniable that I think the young earth creationist worldview is very attractive to a lot of people. It's sort of a self-contained, it answers all of the questions very neatly, ties them up in a bow. We don't have to deal with, you know, blood and fire and fang and all of these difficult questions that Bethany raised, because those are all the result of the fall, and you know, there's a tidy explanation there. Unfortunately, you know, I and many others, I think, are just convinced that that's not an accurate portrayal of reality. But how it's difficult, especially for non-scientists, non-experts, when there's a PhD in this corner and a PhD in this corner and they have different opinions, how do you decide? And so that's a great question. I think we do need to pursue that a bit more. And John's work will be helpful in helping us think through, you know, not just sort of how to, we know there's certain groups of people we want to reach, and in particular the ones about what's leading people toward or away from the faith. All we have is really anecdotal evidence, I would say, at this point. It's a great question.
One quick question. I'm just going to make it as a thank you very much to BioLogos, because I'm with Solid Rock Lectures, and their funding is giving us the privilege to travel to about 20 to 25 venues over the last 2 years, and we're planning to get to one or two more. I didn't actually put the sign up on my screen yesterday because I really had to travel about 3 miles. So I'm not going to build BioLogos for 3 travel miles for my car. So thank
pretty gracious
you very
coach.
Much. Now, standing one on the question about creation and evolution, or old Earth and young Earth, was a recent experience at a seminary where we were asked deliberately by the seminary to participate with a Answers in Genesis group, and the students responded back in writing, of which there were 4, all said they really appreciated hearing both perspectives in the same week.
Got it. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it. Thank you, Catherine.